Proglodytes Radio Podcast is brought to you by Helix Cuffs, stylish, handcrafted men's metal accessories. They're perfect for a prog metal fan because they're wrist cuff bracelets and other accessories made from raw earth metals. Helix Cuffs are precisely and lovingly made by a craftsman and a musician who hammers each piece on an anvil, so you know each piece is one of a kind. They can be dressed up or down. That's what I love about them. They're stylish enough for a tuxedo, but rugged enough for just a t-shirt and jeans. Order now and a wizard will enchant each bracelet with +1 healing and +3 agility. Okay, just joking. But Proglodytes listeners do get a 20% discount if they enter the code PROG at checkout. That's P-R-O-G. You can follow the link on Proglodytes or just go to helixcuffs.com. That's helixcuffs.com. Helix Cuffs. Now, this is Proglodytes. Welcome to Proglodytes Radio. I'm Arthur.
And I'm Thomas.
And we are...
Los Trogloditas.
Los Hermanos Trogloditas.
Progloditas.
Prog. Los Hermanos Progloditas.
Yes. So, today is a special episode for all you listeners out there. It's a special tribute episode to one of our favorite musicians who we sadly lost 2 decades ago, the wonderful, brilliant, and troubled Kevin Gilbert. So we will be talking more about Kevin later on in this episode, and we actually have a treat because we have one of our new Proglodytes, what would you call?
Contributors.
Guest contributors. We have one of our guest contributor, Iris, who is also, she's over at Grendel HQ. She will be joining us to talk about Kevin's legacy, and hopefully we'll be having a lot more featured content from Iris in the future. She's really awesome and a very
super charming.
Yes, we like her.
Yeah, and a Kevin Gilbert fan. So fans, this is our tribute to Kevin Gilbert, because Kevin Gilbert was a musician who died 20 years ago. It was May 18th, 1996. we wanted to tributize Kevin Gilbert because Thomas and I are big, big fans of Kevin Gilbert. Thomas was a fan first, and then I became a fan. And so we'll kind of talk about how we were personally introduced to Kevin Gilbert when we do our interview with Iris Hitting. But so this is what we should do. Here's the agenda, Thomas. 1, prog news. 2, overview of Kevin Gilbert's life. And then I'll... Thomas, you can talk about Kevin Gilbert's life because you're more of an expert historian on Kevin Gilbert than I am.
And sure. That was my minor in college.
Kevin Gilbert?
Yeah, Kevin Gilbertology is what it's called.
All right. And then we're going to do our interview with Iris Hitting. So it's going to be a three-part sonata form. Not really sonata form, but three-part interview. So stay tuned. Okay, so here's the news section. Ready? I should put like a fanfare or something.
Bum, ba-da-da. Okay. Oh, actually, you could just put it in. You don't have to hear my a cappella vocal version of it.
No, that was good. I'll just cut that out and use it every time.
Here, I'll just do a three-part and I'll send it to you and you can use my voice. Starting now. So, Catatonia's new album. Arthur, how are you digging it?
Okay, so I'm going to make a confession to everyone. I received a... advanced copy of this album to stream and review. and I was unable to review it before it actually got released, but I've got notes written down. And I was thinking, you know, the reason I didn't get to it is not because my computer crashed or because I'm working on my dissertation right now. Actually, it's because I'm a bad person.
That about sums a lot of the things that happen on this podcast up. So
we're like basically good cop, bad cop.
Pretty much.
But anyway, guys, the album is really, really good. And I'm not, so I only recently became familiar with Catatonia, but I've been an Anathema fan for a long time, and I know they're often spoken of in the same breath. But I personally found this album really, really good, and I think it's, as far as I know, I'm not a huge expert in their back catalog, but I think it's one of the better albums I've heard from them. So I'm really looking forward to putting out the a review of that, and what I've lacked in timeliness, I would like to make up for in quality. So expect that soon.
Another album that has come out that it's actually been a couple weeks, but I have gotten a chance to listen to the entire thing several times, and I'm blown away. Haken's album Affinity is awesome. It's really, really good. They have a couple videos out. They are wonderful, delightful, and extremely cheesy videos.
Earthrise,
super just prog pop metal.
And I like that song, and my kids like the video because it's very colorful, so don't knock it.
Oh, I'm not knocking it. It's great. So check out Catatonia, The Fall of Hearts, and our coming interview, as well as Haken's new Affinity album with songs such as, I think it's called The Endless Knot and Initiate, 1985. Yeah, check it out. Good stuff.
All right, here's some news I'm pretty excited about, okay? We knew that Trevor Rabin and Rick Wakeman wanted to collaborate at some point, and they've been talking about that and like dropping hints for the past few years. Well, now that's finally culminated in an actual tour, and the rumor is that it's coinciding with an actual album that's coming out. Now, Thomas, your opinion on naming the group Anderson, Rabin, and Wakeman, given that there's an Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, Howe band, and this is yet another mouthful, what do you think?
I think that it should be Rabin, Anderson, Wakeman, and it should be RAW for short.
That is, what about war?
RAW war. Rabar.
Rabin, Anderson, Wakeman, Wakeman, Anderson, Rabin.
I like it. Rawar. Our new band is called Rawar.
And their mascot.
Yeah. Their mascot can be a big dinosaur going Rawar.
Oh, that was bad.
Yeah, I think pretty much both bands, yes. And then this, they have the same amount of, I guess you could say, quote unquote, original members or like super important members. Because at this point, you know, with Chris Squire's passing, they have Steve Howe and they have Alan White, who wasn't an original member but played on a lot of their big albums. I mean, they have Billy Sherwood on bass and John Davidson singing lead and
Jeff Downs?
And Jeff Downs. So it's like both bands are like point something, yes. So, I mean, on one
hand,
so at
this point, they're basically like the Denisovans, the Neanderthals, and the Homo sapiens. All their DNA is just kind of mixing together. There's a lot of shared variants.
So it's just a matter of whether, like, do you like yes enough to want to hear more yes-sounding stuff, or do you like the old stuff way better than you think you could potentially like any of the new stuff and just want to see like a very good tribute band with a couple original members?
Which I'm predicting a sludgy doom metal album.
Pretty much. I hear Anderson's voice has really dropped in the last couple of years with that throat infection. And he's got some really deep growls and screeches.
So he's dropped down to an alto.
Pretty much, yeah. He's an alto now. Yeah.
All right.
Ooh, all right. So I'm really excited about this news. Devin Townsend's new album, Transcendence. They've leaked the cover. It's kind of weird, but pretty awesome looking. If you haven't figured it out, Devin Townsend's one of my favorite musicians of all time. And so any Devin Townsend news, I'm pumped about.
Who's your favorite musician from during the time of the Roman Empire?
Pretty sure that's Rawar.
Well, if you have a favorite musician of all time, you've got to have someone for each time period. So,
okay, well, the late Cretaceous period, I would say Heavysaurus is probably the man
all right,
in that area.
Heavysaurus. Heavysaurus.
Okay. Anyway,
And then the period after that, probably Sleep.
Yeah. Waka. Waka Waka. So Annika is going to be singing on this new album, which Devin Townsend has called him and her the metal Sonny and Cher, which I like because I think their voices really blend.
They're perfect.
He's got such an unusual voice and she's got a really unique voice, but somehow they just... And I think Devin's savvy enough production-wise to know that. Like, he knows that the things he can't do and she can't do, like, they kind of synergize, or however you would say it.
So I have listened to some of Annika's solo stuff and performances that she's done, and I find her, like, not very dynamic, which I think affects my enjoyment of the music. So when she performs live or whatever, especially her acoustic performances, I just feel like she can't really... Or she doesn't really drop it down and bring it up in ways that I think are necessary in acoustic music. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like Damien Rice.
Sure,
who's
yeah,
not
yeah,
a prog guy. But she's just very, like, she the notes that she sings, they attack really heavy and then they pull back, which, in my humble opinion, I hope she doesn't hear this, because she's really nice, I'm sure, but... I just feel like it's not as pleasing in an acoustic setting, but when she sings with Devin, it's like magic.
Sure, yeah. I always think back on the By a Thread performance where she does Pixelate from the Synchestra album. Magic is a good way to describe it. So I have my ticket. I bought my ticket to see Devin and Between the Buried and Me. And I think they say Fallujah is their opening band. They have a split ticket, which is cool. If you're up in Canada, then you will not need a split ticket. I think Devin's the headliner for a lot of the Canada shows. But I'll be seeing them this fall, and you guys should too. See if they're coming close. They have a lot of close by tour dates, or a lot of tour dates all over the place. So check and see if he's coming close. And I went and saw him in Cleveland with Animals as Leaders. It's a show that you cannot miss. It's awesome.
So that actually, so he's co-headlining with Fallujah. Is that what you said?
No, with Between the Buried and Me, and Fallujah is the opening act.
Okay, so that goes right into our next piece of news, which is our last bit of news, and that is that coalition Iraqi forces are actually about to launch an offensive to retake Fallujah from the so-called Islamic State. Okay, but that actually is true, though. And by the time our listeners hear this, maybe they'll know how it went. I really hope they get those guys, because those ISIS guys are jerks.
Yeah, they are. All right. How about let's use that as a transition into our next section. So we are going to talk a little bit about the man of the half an hour, Kevin Gilbert.
I guess it's my biology that everywhere else is where I really want to be. I wonder how heaven would work for me. I guess hell would be worse.
Hey,
All right, so Kevin Gilbert. Let's talk a little bit about Kevin. So this is just sort of an overview of his life, just so you can kind of get an idea. He kind of has, and let me know what you think about this. Like, if you think of the tragic rock star story, just the whole... And we talk later about this. The album Shaping of the True is kind of a reflection of that. But it's the story about this young, just incredibly talented person that just really wants to be famous and wants to be heard and is just as uber talented. And then the industry and just life just kind of burns them and tells them, you know, teaches them a lesson about things. That's kind of like the Kevin Gilbert story, at least.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Wait, so I'm trying to think of a competing claim, like who might also... Because the first thing I thought of was Nick Drake, but... I think Nick Drake was just, he was depressed, and it affected his, like, productivity and stuff. I don't think he's the tragic, classical, screwed by the industry story.
Yeah, but I think for every, I think any band probably has a Kevin Gilbert-like story, if not 20.
Sid Barrett.
Maybe, yeah, Sid Barrett may be a victim of drugs. I'm just saying, like, for every Kiss... Or for every REO Speedwagon or any, like, popular band that somehow, like, is still touring, there's 20, 30, 50, 100 bands that had a single for a week on some radio station in Cleveland, you know, in 1970. So there are a lot of Johnny Virgil's. That's the name of his protagonist he kind of wrote himself into in Shame of the True. There are a lot of Johnny Virgil's out there. So he was born in California. He, as a young guy, he got really good at a lot of different instruments. So he was a composer, singer. He played pretty much every instrument, really proficiently, to the point where he was, you know, when he started playing around, he did session stuff for a lot of different people. He played keys for Eddie Money. He had a great ear for production as well. And I'll kind of get into that. But he started this prog rock group called Giraffe, and you can actually go on the 1988 Yamaha Soundcheck rock music competition YouTube video thing, and you can see his just awful hair and everyone's awful hair in the band. You can see him perform his song. It's called Because of You, and he actually did another version of it on his album Thud, but... You could see kind of a proto Kevin because it's that same kind of smarmy metaphorical lyricism, but it's just drowning in the most just 80s production ever. Everyone's wearing just the most 80s outfits, and he's got just this spiked up hair on the top and this nasty mullet in the back.
And he never fully got away from the 80s production, right? Because the way I see it, he carried that with him through his music. So if we were to make, you know, we'll make recommendations later in that part of the interview, but listeners who are interested in this podcast should prepare yourself for a fair amount of just like the 80s and early 90s slick production that carries through most of his music.
Yeah, the early stuff, it's all free on his website, NRG, No Reasons Given, I think is what it's called. It's got the gated drums, like the do-do-do-do-do, and the really cheesy, like, synth brass hits and stuff. So, you know, like, when you listen to it, just know you're kind of listening to the genius in embryo kind of thing. And just appreciate it for what it is. If you have an aversion to that 80s style production, which if you don't, then you're it's going to be good stuff. It is good stuff. Anyway, so they won this huge competition with thousands of bands. It was kind of a big deal. This big shot producer named Pat Leonard was really digging Kevin's style, so he said, "Hey, why don't you start a band with me?" So Pat Leonard, Kevin Gilbert started a band called Toy Matinee, and they got together some other really good musicians that also played on the album. And like we were talking about before, Toy Matinee is just solid pop music with a progressive sort of twist. It's got some really brilliant moments on it, especially lyrically. The song Toy Matinee is just gorgeous to me. So many profound lyrics just really melancholy sound. But overall, you know, like we were saying, it's got this 80s kind of feel to it. There's kind of this tragic backstory about it where Kevin was trying to release it. And then there was a bunch of label issues, and then Pat Leonard wanted everyone to sign contracts saying that they had to do everything that he said, that they were kind of in his control for several albums. And then the other guys in the band kind of jumped ship at that point, and Kevin was kind of left there with a pile of CDs. It was really badly promoted, which stinks, because honestly, it was 1990, the music was good, and it fit the zeitgeist, and it's really catchy. You know, if you get on YouTube after this and check out a song from that era, Last Plane Out is their single, and it's a great prog pop song. It really
so
is.
So my question about that, because I don't know Toy Matinee that well. I know his later stuff better. So the way that you described it, like kind of slick 80s pop with a prog twist. So how would you compare it to, say, Yes and Genesis from the 80s era? So other proggy poppy stuff.
You know, so I framed it the way I did just because, unlike the others, there isn't a lot of weird time signatures or 13-minute songs. All of them are 4 or 5 minutes. I think maybe a 6-minute or something like that. So it's all pretty slick in that sense. But then you go song by song. The first song is about Salvador Dali. You got a song dedicated to Vaclav Havel.
Do you want to spell that so people can Google it while you're...
Vaclav Havel, right? He was the guy who led the Velvet Revolution in, now defunct Yugoslavia?
Right. Maybe? Yes, of course.
One of the Slavias, if it's not... Somebody can fact check me on that. Anyway, so you've got dense topics, interesting topics. Lyrics are pretty genius at times. I think Pat Leonard knew that he had a genius on his hands. It's just, you got a kid who, you know, is just so good at what he does, but maybe doesn't know the know-hows or the ropes. And he's like, ooh, I'm going to show him the ropes. It just becomes this thing where Kevin probably saw himself being painted into a corner. Which, you know, that's like every musician's nightmare that wants to get famous, is like getting into a contract that basically sucks everything that they love about what they do out of it. So anyway, they were successful but not successful enough, and everything kind of blew up, which leads to kind of the next section of Kevin's life. The tumultuous 90s is how we can frame it. So
now, granted, like he died in 96, so we're already like almost to the end of the story if you count it in number of like years of his life.
Yeah,
so that's part of the tragic nature of this, is, you know, if Kevin had stayed alive, he would have a long string of really cool albums right now.
Yeah, and he made really big contributions to early prog. We can talk about that. One of the interesting things he did that a lot of people don't know is he produced a lot of albums. He produced and collaborated with Madonna, Michael Jackson. They actually wrote a song about Madonna called "The Queen of Misery." So nice. that's a Toy Matinee song. It was kind of based around just that fast life of famous people. But he produced Spock's Beard's first album. So Spock's Beard, The Light. So that was around the early 90s as well. He was a dear friend of a lot of the Spock's guys. So, but as you can imagine, he's feeling pretty down in the dumps at this point. So him and a bunch of basically other people who had been kind of burned by the music industry, got started getting together down in Pasadena, and they would get together on Tuesdays and kind of drink and complain and moan and play music. They'd write songs together. Kevin Gilbert was dating this young woman at the time who was named Sheryl Crow. And he decided to take her to sing every now and then and, you know, say, hey, sing the lyrics to this song. She had a good voice. She actually sang on a couple toy matinee tours early on. So, yeah, they brought Sheryl, and she sounded pretty good. And this is where the story gets a little murky, we'll say. Because some people say Sheryl basically said, hey, you know, this is really good stuff. We should record it. And they're all like, blah, blah, blah. We don't want to record it. We hate life. Like, this is all about how much we hate the music industry. And she's like, well, then I'm just going to record it and kind of leave all of you out of the picture. And then that's what became of Sheryl Crow's wildly successful Grammy Award-winning Tuesday Night Music Club album, which features all of the guys as co-writers on it. Other accounts are a little bit more, I guess, a little less, you could say, sinister on her part, that it was just sort of like things shifting here and there, and that some of the guys were supportive and some of them weren't.
So let me pause. So let's just call it the dark narrative.
Yeah.
The dark narrative is that she stole the music, went off, got famous off of it, and left everyone behind in the dust, including Kevin Gilbert, her now former partner, right?
Yeah.
So my challenge to the standard dark narrative, which is floating around in the mythology in the California music scene even today, I have this on good authority. So the challenge to that is, I mean, at any point, those guys could have legally challenged the album release, correct?
Yeah, I guess so. The thing is, if you look at, like, if you open up a songbook or whatever, you'll see Kevin Gilbert and Bill Bottrell. You'll see their name underneath the songs. I think, honestly, so I do remember watching this Letterman performance from many, many years ago where Sheryl Crow, they asked her about leaving Las Vegas, which was a song written by Kevin Gilbert. It's pretty much, if you listen to Kevin Gilbert a lot and then you listen to Tuesday Night Music Club, you're like, yeah, I totally hear his influence. But
totally.
That song, in particular, he asked her, Letterman, I think it was, asked her about it. And she was like, oh, well, he was like, why did you sing about Las Vegas if you're from LA? And she was like, well, it's kind of a metaphor for LA. So it's basically like she kind of started taking credit for it. And that's what made everybody mad. They were like, whatever, Sheryl, do your thing. But then she started basically saying it was her. And then they all were like, hey, come on, throw us a bone here. We're all still starving.
Got it.
So, yeah, the 100% true story maybe never will be known. But there is in the anthology Rock and Roll Will Never Die, there's a piece called Only a Keyboard Player by Joel Slavin, spelled Slevin, if you want to check it out. And it's kind of like a telling of Kevin Gilbert's life with the more dark narrative playing. And just kind of like how his story is the typical rock star, you know, crash and burn kind of story.
So is it that guy's article that is driving the narrative, or was it out there before then?
Chicken and the egg. I think maybe he kind of formulated it into a cohesive narrative, but bits and pieces. I mean, Central Wilson's another writer who dated Kevin Gilbert. Her and Kevin were really close, and she wrote stuff about, you know, how crummy things were and blah blah blah. So you know, at this point, who knows? So, once again, burned, Kevin goes, and I mean, it's really sad to me. It's sad, but at the same time, it's life. He started having to write, like, jingles and commercials. So, there was probably in the years of, like, 1992 to 1995, there's probably a host of, like, TV jingles that you may have really enjoyed that Kevin Gilbert wrote under some pseudonym. He did help with movie soundtracks and different things like that. So he just kind of worked, not as this brilliant musician, but as sort of like a hired gun. This whole time he's just thinking, you know, I've never written a solo album. So he started putting together this solo album, and he ended up releasing it in 1995 called Thud, which is a really, really brilliant piece of work. Also, very, if you listen to his poppy stuff in the 80s, it's cerebral, and I wouldn't say it's happy or joyful, but it isn't dark. And Thud just has this sort of defeated, melancholic, dark overtone to it. Would you agree, Arthur?
Yes, but also he... there are some qualities to it that I think are really interesting. For instance, when you say kind of defeated and dark, you know, I would say it's also really tied together by the fact that he is so good as a lyricist and so good as a storyteller that you get caught up in the stories. So I don't know. I guess when I hear defeated and dark, I think that maybe it sounds like you're just going to be weeping the whole time, but it's really a brilliant piece of work.
There are a couple songs. The reason why I said that in particular, All Fall Down is kind of about the world ending, just watching the world end. Song for a Dead Friend is about him lamenting the suicide of his friend. Goodness Gracious is about just him sitting around and saying, man, the world's pretty screwed up.
T for One
is about this guy who falls in love with a woman and
doesn't make a move fast enough.
Doesn't make a move fast enough, and then it turns out. I mean, just there isn't a song. What I will say is, you know, for any headspace you're in, you're going to be like, this is great music. But if you're in kind of a dark, melancholic headspace, he has songs that'll kind of make you laugh. Like the song Joytown is just about heaven, kind of. Like, we're living here in Joytown, and it's just kind of one-liner after one-liner, just these funny little things like, you know, this image where he says Buddha and Jesus and Zarathustra and Moses, and they're all sitting around this table playing poker and just talking, you know, talking about how messed up the world is and just kind of laughing about their legacies. So he has these really, this really interesting way of kind of painting these evocative pictures and you know, having fun with it. You know, the entire time you're just kind of listening to this guy, this smarmy guy kind of telling the story, but it ends up being really entertaining. I won't say that, like Arthur said, it's not going to leave you crying in fetal position, but it's got some really kind of interesting stories and songs on it.
So here's a question. I'm recalling somewhere in my memory an album that he did called Caviar.
Yeah. So
where does that fall in the timeline? I don't know that album. I listened to a few tracks and I was like, it's not really my thing.
So Caviar was a posthumous release. So,
okay.
That was, real quick, we'll just mention while he was doing Thud, he also was kind of having, he had this, kind of moment in the sun. Kevin would always talk about how one of his biggest influences was Genesis' album The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. So he actually got his Giraffe band back together and Progfest 94 got his Giraffe band together and they performed The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway album in its entirety live, which for prog fans, that was a huge deal. Huge, huge deal. Because that's one of the seminal prog albums of all time. And
Genesis just wasn't really doing it.
No. Genesis had just released We Can't Dance, you know, I Can't Dance kind of stuff. So he released that album. Iris and Arthur and I will talk about just how awesome that album is later and just what a killer job Kevin did on it. But all of this started happening. You could say that things started looking up. Genesis was so impressed with his performance that they sent, they started vetting him to maybe be a replacement, because around that time Phil Collins was leaving Genesis, and so they were considering. He did such a bang up job that They were considering using him as a replacement for Phil Collins. And now, the part that we've all been trying to avoid, dreading. Yeah. Kevin Gilbert was found dead in his apartment. It was ruled accidental suicide. If you really want to know the details, go ahead and look it up. Needless to say, he died in a very tragic and unfortunate way.
Let's say undignified.
Yes. He was found by his agent, who had basically was going to tell him the news that Genesis was looking into him, which, can you imagine, like, what a big break that would have been? Yeah. So, everybody in his life, you know, knew he was kind of self-destructive and knew he was just kind of this guy, you know, this brilliant guy that they all were like, why can't this guy get famous? Why can't this guy just get his due? So there are a lot of people who write about just the legacy that he had in their lives, and they're just like, I cannot believe that this happens. I can't believe that he was taken from us. So, Kevin's loss was a huge loss for his friends and for people close to him. So
talk a little bit about Shaming of the True then, because it was a posthumous release. So Caviar is posthumous, Shaming of the True is posthumous, but I think Shaming of the True is the one that people are really interested in because it's just beautiful concept album about the music industry. And I have to say, like, this is going to sound hard to believe, but this album might have single-handedly discouraged me from actually pursuing a music career. And if you are incredulous, just listen to the album and just consider that I was trying to, like, write music and release music in the mid to late 2000s when the whole industry was kind of collapsing and the castle was falling down and the labels were all crumbling and everyone had 100 followers on MySpace and that's it. So that was when I listened to this album. Simultaneously, I was working at a music shop and I saw a lot of people come in who had tried to make it in the music industry with varying levels of success, but mostly negative. So I listened to that album and it so perfectly encapsulated what it was trying to do that I thought, you know what? I'm going to go back and get my degree.
Yeah. So Shaming of the True, this was going to be Kevin's magnum opus. Like, this was going to be his masterpiece. And so he had been working on it in bits and pieces, but he was such a perfectionist that he wanted to get it perfect. So, he was working with a guy named John Cuniberti, and it was basically like, hey, here's a little track here, here are my notes. But he never got the time to sort of dedicate it and work on it. So a few years after his death, when you got a guy like this, and this is the case with a lot of these musical people, Prince is a big example. They have so many hours of unreleased material, and their estates a lot of time are just filing through this stuff. Like, how are we going to release this? You know, Zappa's estate, they're releasing things piece by piece just because, you know, they're trying to figure out the best way to finance it, you know, in a way that makes sense and that allows the fans to keep on getting stuff while simultaneously, like, not devaluing, you know, the artist's impact. So it's a complicated thing. But John Rubin, who's Kevin Gilbert's manager, as well as he asked John Cuniberti and Nick DiVergilio from Spock's Beard, the drummer, to get together and work on this album, and basically finish it. I think that he thought it was such an important statement that Kevin wanted to make that they thought that it would be a way to sort of memorialize her. It would memorialize his legacy in a really substantial way if it was released. So, kind of like what Arthur was saying, and kind of like we mentioned, the Too Long Didn't Read version of the Shaming of the True album is the story of this young man named Johnny Virgil, who is super talented. He gets eaten up by some agents. He gets caught up in the you know, superficialities of Hollywood and LA and all that stuff. And you just listen to this kid's gradual descent into, I guess you could say, madness as he gets caught up in the whirlwind of life. And then by the end, he's just sort of like this resigned musician that said, you know what, you know, I never thought I would be this, but I am. And that's okay. You know, you may hear my songs on the radio, but, you know, the overarching kind of tale is the classic music and rock star and artist tale. Just be true to what you're doing and don't get caught up in all the crap that can inevitably, you know, try to pull you in. That sounds really cliche, maybe, or maybe like a boring story or whatever, but it's heartbreaking at times, like tear-inducingly heartbreaking. It's hilarious. Like, it's got some ridiculously funny parts. Just, you know, one example is the dance of the A&R men. So the Sweet Fugue. It's this fugue, and it's got all these different vocal lines, but they're all, like, supposed to be record company executives, and they're all just talking at him. Like, it's just really, really funny. But yeah, I mean, some of the songs just will move you to tears. Other songs will make you laugh. Other songs will make you just, you know, ponder your existence.
And some of the funniest parts, I think, are the fact that he kind of bomb drops because he names people specifically in the album in a tongue-in-cheek way. Like, I don't think he's, like, actually flinging accusations. But he drops names like Cheryl, Arsenio... I'm thinking of the song Fun. He talks about Arsenio. He talks about Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, some girls at the bar say Leonardo DiCaprio is going to make him a star, stuff like that.
Yeah, so it's really funny because he doesn't pull any punches. Like, it's just obvious what he's talking about and who he's talking about. Just
and you can totally, you can imagine the scene, you know, these scuzzy parties where, you know, everybody's just totally hammered and drunk and everyone's super, super self-important. And he's just like watching the entire thing, just like, oh my gosh, get me out of here. Yeah, so with that album, you know, I could say, hey, listen to this track or listen to that track. But really, it's such a brilliant piece of work that I would say it's the type of album you really should dedicate some time to. Caviar, on the other hand, is more of just this big running joke. I will say, you know, we have a lot of different listeners to our podcast. Some of them maybe perform more G or PG rated music, and some of them have, you know, the tolerance for a bit more, I guess you could say, edgy lyrics and themes. Sammy the True has some moments where it's pretty much R rated. Some really kind of gross, for lack of a better term, humor, which it's funny, but at the same time, it's gross. Caviar is just basically the grossest moments of Shaming of the True, but an entire album. So it's this industrial release, but it's all just, you know, to give you an example, Cover Your Ears, Children. One of the tracks is called Death Orgy 9000, and it's about giant orgy robots, like, fighting each other to the death. So it's real goofy and tongue-in-cheek and kind of twisted, but it's all meant to be this sort of sick joke. You know, Kevin Gilbert, you could say a lot about him, but he definitely had, like, this big sense of humor that really shows through his music. And that doesn't always translate without sounding like Weird Al, you know. He was able to just be really funny and really genuine and stuff through his music. But, you know, if you're not really into that sort of humor, then I'd say avoid Caviar. Maybe may not be your cup of tea. So, yeah, on top of all the other things that have come out of the Kevin Gilbert estate, there have been a couple albums that just have songs here and there. Nuts and Bolts are a couple that came out recently. They're worth checking out. They haven't really affected me in the way that Thud and Shaming of the True have, but they still have, you know, they've still been powerful. They have some powerful tracks and some moving tracks. So,
okay. That's basically so the last thing I wanted to bring up, I feel like I should have, you know, this just came to me. I should have prepared this beforehand, but I feel like there's going to be a tribute concert. Do you know about that? There's going to be a Kevin Gilbert tribute concert.
I don't know anything about that, actually.
Okay, I'm going to look it up on Google right now. So you talk about something, and I'll look it up, and I'll tell you.
Well, the Shaming of the True album, I will also mention that there is like a pretty... It's kind of expensive, but his estate's selling this really... Dude,
there was a Kevin Gilbert tribute concert in Germany in 2014. So I guess I'm a couple of years late on that.
Yeah.
That's on YouTube. You can check that out.
Yeah, there was a limited edition Shaming the True album that was released that was really had tons of really awesome artwork that was kind of Kevin inspired. So if you really want to get the full experience, or if you love the album enough, it may be hard to get a hold of because there are only 1,400 editions released. But anyway, the estate still got stuff and they're still releasing stuff. So if you just can't get enough of the guy, then maybe there are more tracks that'll come down the line. Anyway, even if I don't care much for every single song on these releases, you know, when you look at the musical artists that you like for example, Peter Gabriel is another example of a guy who I really enjoy him as an artist. And so even though I don't listen to every single song and love every single song, I like him enough that I give him the time to do that. With his stuff. Kevin's that way. I think Kevin was an interesting enough and maybe compelling and maybe inspirational for me enough artist that I'll always give him the time to check out his unreleased stuff because I feel like I learn more about him and the life and the lessons he learned from listening to that stuff.
So one of the things that I think about is, okay, Mitch Hedberg, another kind of tragic figure, but in comedy. But the reason I think Mitch Hedberg was such a good comedian is because he captured your friendship in a way. So when he's on the stage and he tells a joke and it's kind of a dumb joke, you laugh because you want him to succeed because you
totally,
like
yeah.
him. So you
yeah.
want to be his friend. You want to get inside his head. So when he tells a joke and he does it, he has such a humble delivery. You're just like, oh, that's not that funny, but I'm going to laugh because I just love that dude. And that's how I think of Kevin's music.
Totally, yeah. And that's how you should think about Kevin's music too, listener.
That's right.
You know, so Kevin is an artist worth checking out. And I don't think that he gets enough credit from the Prague world. Prague fans who love him really, really love him. But the general, your average progressive rock listener, I think you get a lot more love. So we're going to talk later with Iris about just, you know, we're going to kind of repeat that. I don't think it could be said enough. Check out his stuff if you get a chance. It's awesome.
All right. So stay tuned, folks. In the third segment of this tribute, we're going to have an interview with our new friend, Iris Hitting, who is a new European correspondent. That's what we should say, European correspondent, because she can go to all the concerts in Europe that we can't go to. So,
which means basically all the concerts.
Right.
Because that's Prague for you.
Right. That's true. So, yeah, that's true.
I mean, Shaming of the True had a concert in Germany. What? Like... Kevin yeah. was from America.
Yeah. So, all right. So stay tuned. We got an interview with Iris Hitting coming up next on Proglodites.
Los Progloditas.
All right, we are very privileged to be in the virtual studio because we're actually doing this long distance across the Atlantic Ocean via satellite or cable. I don't know how they do that, do the internet over the Atlantic Ocean, but we're here with Iris Hitting.
Mm-hmm.
You can say hi.
Hello. Thank you very much.
So, Iris, why don't you introduce yourself for our fans who are not familiar with your work?
Okay, well, my name is Iris Hidding. Some people know me as Ier, which is a typical Dutch shortage of the name Iris. And I have my own, blog webpage called Grendel Headquarters. And there you can find all my album reviews, concert reviews, and also my interviews I had with several artists. Most of them are progressive rock artists. And in the meantime, I also work for House of Prog Radio, which is an American radio station. And it's an American internet radio station. And I also work for Background Magazine, which is a Dutch website. But it used to be a magazine, but all articles are in English, so people can check it out if they want to. So, yeah, that's what I do at the moment.
And Grendel is cool. is a Marillion reference, correct?
Yeah, absolutely true. I will tell a little story about the name. I came up with the name. I have a colleague on House of Prog Radio. His name is Ian Beerbout, and he has a show called Deep Cuts, and he's still in college, and he's studying in music relations, and he had to make a fake letter during one of his courses on school, and he came up with the name Grendel Headquarters in his letter, and he named me the director of Grendel Headquarters, and when he showed me the letter, I felt very flattered. So since then, I use the name of the name of my website, actually. So yeah, that's the story behind it.
Very cool.
Nice. So I also read a rumor that you have an eyebrow piercing, is that
yes,
right? But
exactly.
Now you have to get rid of it.
Well, the reason I had to get rid of it because most of the time when you get a piercing and it's the skin gets of course very irritated, and suddenly after 7 years my skin got so irritated that my piercing literally wanted to pushed my piercing out of my face, so I had to remove it because the skin around my piercing was getting thinner and thinner, so I had to remove it. And I'm feeling a bit sad because I had it for 7 years now, and now I only have my lip piercing left and some piercings in my ears, but I miss it every day now because every time I touch my face and I'm like, hey, where's my oh yes, it's gone.
Yeah, it's like wearing a ring or other things you just get used to having.
So you're going through a period of bereavement. You've lost your friend, close friend.
Yeah, exactly. Because I only took it out when I really had to. For example, when I worked for a few days at a Christmas fair at a castle, and they wanted me to look representative, so I was like, okay, well, I take it off then. But immediately when I was finished with work, I immediately switched it again, of course.
Oh. Yeah. Wait, did you say in a castle?
Yeah, Christmas fair in a castle. There's a castle in the Netherlands called De Haar, and it's a very big and old castle, yes.
Well, that's cool. So we don't have those in the United States, because, see, we've got the Castle Post in Kentucky, but it was more made in the 60s by just a very strange rich person.
Ah, yes. A sort of fake castle.
Yeah, it's kind of fake.
Totally fake.
Totally fake. Not like us, though. we're the real deal.
Yay!
So, the theme of our show is a theme that's near and dear to us. So, as we mentioned in the introduction to the show, it is the 17th will be the 20th year anniversary of Kevin Gilbert passing away. So Iris, you mentioned that you are a fan of Kevin Gilbert, and I know Thomas is. In fact, Thomas is the one that introduced me, first of all. So how about we do this? Thomas, why don't you mention where you first heard about Kevin, and then Iris, you can too. But see, since I heard about him from Thomas, I'm kind of curious, Thomas, where you first heard of Kevin.
So many moons ago in the internet world, I used to be pretty active on message boards. You know, that was a thing in the late 90s, early 1000s. And
back in the 20th century.
Yeah, back in the 20th century, not in the 21st, not in the future. So I was on the Dream Theater and Spock's Beard message boards, and I was pretty active. And there was a DJ there named Jim Harrell. Everyone called him Papa Jim. And he was the administrator over at Spock's Beard. And he had a radio station, and he would play Kevin Gilbert occasionally. And it was around that time that, and Kevin Gilbert was also known for producing The Light, Spock's Beard's first CD. And so I'd heard about him so much that I just said, you know what, eventually I need to check him out. And so it was back in the Napster days, so I downloaded a few of his songs, and after that, I was just hooked. Kevin Gilbert had this amazing gift of being, saying so much just with such simple phrases. Like, he was able to say, in one of his songs, he says, the emptiness of paragraphs that are better is one word. And I just feel like he, with pop music and with prog rock, he was able to say so much with just a song. So I bought Thud and Shaming of the True soon after. And those two albums are some of my favorite albums of all time. And we could talk more about those specific albums later. But then I told my parents about them. I told Arthur about them and kind of shared them with everybody that I could. I was hooked.
Cool. So that must have been where I first heard about him.
Yeah, I think I introduced you to them, and you weren't crazy about it. But then I went for 2 years on a mission, and it was some point during that mission where you wrote me a letter, and you said, I finally listened to that CD you got me, and it's really, really awesome, but it's a little dirty, and so I don't listen to it as much, because, you know, it was Shaming
of the True.
Yeah,
it wasn't even that. It seemed a little over the top at first, one. And two, when I listened to it, like, I was trying to actively pursue a music career, and that was just like
poison.
Very deflating, because it was just like, oh man, is it really like that?
Yeah.
So, anyway.
So that's how I found out about Kevin, and that's kind of the history.
Okay, Iris, do you remember the first exposure you had with Kevin's music?
Yes, I do remember, because it's like a year ago, I think. I was listening to a show on progrock.com. I was listening to, I think, Check It Out with DJ Peter Prog, which is a British DJ. And his show only lasted for 2.5 hours, but I was like feeling like, nah, I'll just stick to the station and just listen to what the automatic stream has to offer with music. So I was still listening and doing some other stuff, and suddenly I heard a song and I was like, hey, this is very catchy. This is some good music. And it was a song from Toy Matinee named Last Plane Out, and I was like, I need to find more of this music. And so that was my first introduction, and I was looking on Spotify later on if I could find any of his music, and I was like, this is Kevin, pretty good artist, a pretty good band. He's also that was my introduction.
Yeah, Toy Matinee is an interesting album. It's it's very poppy, but it's very unashamedly prog as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's poppy, but also, especially the song Last Plane Out, I was like, it uses some kind of elements in music that you won't hear in pop music, for example. And I was like, yeah, this is some nice. They really thought about this song, and I was like, yeah, catchy and surprising at the same time.
For sure, yeah.
So that's how I feel about him. So after you introduced me, so a lot of the bands, Thomas, that you've introduced me to are musicians. Like, it has taken a long time for them to grow on me, because a lot of times what you listen for in music is different than what I listen to or listen for. And so when I was listening to him, I was like, I think I can tell that this guy is good. But it took a long time for it to dawn on me, like, exactly how complex and how really beautiful his music is. So the first time it really dawned on me. So if you want, this can go into like a deeper discussion about his music. But the first time it really dawned on me that he was all that, it was the song Song for a Dead Friend, which is on Thud, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so it's on Thud. And I listened to the song, and what I usually listen for in music is a really human element. So I want to feel like I'm kind of cutting through to the person. And that's probably just my interest in psychology and human beings. But that song, I mean, you listen to it and you get the sense that, like, should I really be listening to this? Because he writes it for this friend who died by suicide, right? Yeah. And
yep.
Yeah, and he is writing it to his friend, and it sounds like they're inside jokes and references that he had with his friend, and it sounds like it's so personal, and it's such a personal, like, handwritten message to this guy named Danny that I just felt like I was intruding by listening to it. But that was what convinced me that I was listening to somebody who really had a gift for putting himself into music.
Totally. Yeah, I think it was that song that I quoted earlier, The Emptiness of Paragraphs That Were Better as One Word.
Right, that is from that song.
Yeah, I think there are several moments that really stand out to kind of show me his brilliance. Some of them are on Thud, but Shaming of the True, I think, is just one of his most brilliant statements. For those who haven't heard the album before, it's kind of like an autobiographical story about... It's a concept album that he wrote about this character named Johnny Virgil. And he's kind of a foil for what actually happened to Kevin. Kevin, you know, was this brilliant musician who just couldn't imagine his life doing anything else. He starts down this path of being a famous musician, and he just gets burned hard. And each of the songs just gets progressively more depressing until at the very end, he's just sort of like the shell of a human being.
Strumming in the rain in his alone. Little shack.
As a total has-been.
It's super sad.
But there's a song on there called Sweet Fugue, Dance of the A&R Men. And it's sort of like this gentle giant-ish fugue with multiple voices. And they're all like these record companies calling him. Hi, Jack. It's Mel from Megalophone. I have listened to your tape for the 19th time. Anyway, and they're all these voices, and they're kind of interweaving in and out. Basically kind of these... record men hawking their pitching, you know, saying, oh, we want you. And then the very end of the song, we're like, oh, by the way, we can't release your album. Oh, by the way, you know, you need to fire all the members of your band. By the way, you know, you kind of suck.
That,
and you're kind of
that line is great.
And,
you don't really need the band. They are in the way.
We only wanted you anyway. Anyway, so the song just kind of, and then at the very end, there's a circus music that just plays until the end of the song. And to me, like, that's so revealing to how it must have felt just to be this young musician, this brilliant musician with stars in your eyes, thinking you're going to say some wonderful statement. And then it just turns out you get burned left and right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's one of my favorite Kevin Gilbert moments for sure.
Mm-hmm. He was still in his teens, right, when he started making music?
Yeah, he was in this band, several bands. One of them was called NRG, No Reasons Given. And then later he was in a band called Giraffe.
Mm-hmm.
Both were kind of pop prog. Their albums are up online. NRG is free on his website. It's sort of dated, the production values, but you can kind of see his brilliance kind of an embryo on NRG. And some of his songs he went on to do again later.
Mm-hmm. I think that that might be a barrier to a lot of people getting into Kevin, like the production, because it is very like a mid to late 80s, moving into the 90s production. But I think if our fans are into like Marillion music or, you know, Flower Kings or maybe prog from that era, I don't think they'll have a problem getting into that.
No.
I'm going to pause for just a second. Do y'all know the band The Hold Steady, Iris? Do you know The Hold Steady?
No, tell me more.
Oh, well, I just got a text from Jim that said Franz, the keyboardist, is back in The Hold Steady, and that would only be meaningful if you know the band, because he was a really good keyboardist, and then he quit, and then I just found out he got back in the band. So anyway, unpause. Let's go back. I'll do a different thing about that. That's not prog at all. That's not proggy. I'm sorry. Just as you were, folks, as you were.
Anyway.
Sorry, Thomas. Sorry, Iris.
Oh, no
She's
worries.
Like, why did I stay up till this?
No, I don't mind. I really enjoy this conversation, so please continue.
Okay. So, Iris, do you have a favorite? Anything that you really, like, keep in heavy rotation?
Favorite of Kevin?
Yes, Kevin.
Yeah, of course. Well, of course, the Toy and Matinee album is... I think it's really great, but also his how he also did Genesis, Lamp Lies Down on Broadway.
Oh, gosh, that's so amazing.
Yeah.
Thomas, tell me about that, or Iris, because I don't know that, and Thomas is the Genesis fan. I'm not so big on Genesis, so Iris, could you tell me about that?
Oh, well, maybe Thomas can tell you more. I only saw it on YouTube, and I was really stunned. I was like, whoa. But I think Thomas can tell more about the background behind it, I think.
He was in when he was a young man, and he said that when he was a young man, he would listen to The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, and he would act out Rail's parts in the mirror. It was just his dream show to play Rail in The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. So he got the opportunity to play with his bandmates, and I think it was Nick DiVergilio on drums.
It wasn't
the original drummer, but yeah, my favorite part, just the way that it opens. Did you see that, Iris?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
it's Kevin Gilbert holding this radio, and it says, "We're going to play some classic Genesis." And he's like, "Oh, yeah." And then it says, "This is Invisible Touch." And so Invisible Touch starts playing. And he takes the stereo and throws it in a trash can and just beats the crud out of it. And the crowd just goes wild, you know. Everyone hates the cheesy pop Genesis, and they love the old Genesis. So, yeah, it's brilliant. And there's something about his voice... Kevin's voice, it works really well with the Lamb. He handles it really well, and he's a great front man, so it comes together. I would definitely check it out on YouTube or wherever you can. It's a really awesome concert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. And isn't that he also wanted to audition for Genesis to replace Phil Collins?
Yes, that's actually, he unfortunately died, and his body was found by his agent, who had come to his house to tell him that he had secured a Genesis audition.
I didn't know he wanted to do an audition for Genesis, because Phil left, of course, but I didn't know that it was related with his death, that his agent found him. It's terrible.
It's really tragic how it all happened. He had a life that just kind of frustrates you to hear about. You feel like the world never really got to see his brilliance magnified. You know, Shaming of the True, I think, is one of the best prog albums that's come out in maybe the last 30 years or so. But it was released posthumously. He didn't get to release it himself. And it maybe wasn't the way he wanted it. It was released later. And so, yeah, as a fan of his, you know, you just see this brilliant artist and you say, you know, what will he be remembered for? Will it be his great works, or will it be that he helped write Sheryl Crow's first album, or will it be that he played keyboards for Eddie Money? Like, what will be his legacy? And I unfortunately think that he has not really been given the respect that's due to him for his brilliance. His brilliance was never sort of appreciated by the mainstream.
I think a lot of people also, yeah, it's sad to say, but also forgot about him. Like, yeah, he's dead, nothing more. But he was a brilliant musician, composer, anything. And I think, how do you call it, that he will sadly... Because also the time wasn't right, because prog and 90s, that's also a bit of a weird combination. And yeah, his best days were in the 90s, and of course, how will he be remembered is the big question now. You don't know, because he did a lot of stuff, but you really have no clue how people will remember him.
It's true. The mid-90s were a weird time. Progressive rock kind of had a heyday in the late 90s, right? With Spock's Beard, Pain of Salvation, Dream Theater. But mid and early 90s, that was kind of when grunge was taking hold and prog was kind of swept under the rug. So when Spock's Beard first came out and when Kevin Gilbert was trying to, you know, starting to do prog, it was just, yeah, you're right. The time was not fertile for like a great progressive musician to come.
No.
I think you're totally right about the timing. I think that it's just maybe if he'd have managed to hold out a little bit longer. But that's just part of the sad, like, tragedy story. You're making me sad, Thomas. You're bringing me down right now. I'm going to have to do some therapy on myself.
But I have the feeling if he was still alive today, then I think he would have been not famous, but I think he would have been a concurrent of Steve Wilson, in my opinion.
I think so.
Yeah.
Maybe. I think possibly that's true. Because he was such a chameleon that he was one of those artists where, like, I think that if he have continued creating music, everyone would have found at least one album that they like of Kevin, because he would have kept changing it up and discovering new things, and he'd probably be doing a dubstep thing right now or something. I don't know. He'd be doing something completely different. So I think that's right.
There's a very comparable artist with Kevin Gilbert, and I hesitate to say this, but Todd Rundgren is sort of like, to me, what Kevin Gilbert would have been if he would have been alive, you know? Similar thing, Todd started Utopia in the mid-70s, and that was kind of when prog was phasing out. But he just kept on going, and he kept on innovating and all that stuff. So when I think about if Kevin Gilbert would have survived, I think Todd Rundgren, who, coincidentally, is doing... dance poppy kind of stuff right now. So
really, see, I thought you were going to say Jeff Buckley, because I think they're both kind of in the same, in my brain, they're like in the same compartment, because I think they both would have done a lot of really cool prog music. I really think Jeff Buckley would have had some albums that we could easily talk about on this album or this podcast.
You know, on his B-side, he covered Back in New York City by Genesis.
Jeff Buckley
did.
I'm going to pretend that I knew that. Yeah, of course. That's why I brought it up, Thomas.
Cool.
Why don't we close this segment with just, like, if you have any parting thoughts about Kevin or about Proglodytes or about, like, how cool I am, just feel free. Thomas, you know me longer.
I would say, don't talk about Arthur. my first tip. But my second thing is, if you're listening and you haven't heard Kevin's music, I would say a good introduction. If you can handle the more 80s production, I would say Toy Matinee is a great start. Mm-hmm. If you maybe like more contemporary sound, I would say Thud is a great start. That's his solo album. So Kevin Gilbert, Thud. And if you're a prog fan and you can handle some profanity and some obscenity, but also you like to laugh a lot, The Shaming of the True is your album. It's a brilliant concept album, one of his best, for sure. So those are my parting words. I think the best way we can remember him is by listening to his music and just reminding ourselves of just how awesome he is.
Mm. No, absolutely. And of course, the way he does Genesis, it's just amazing, really. You just like, whoa!
With the face paint and the leather jackets and everything, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
All right, Arthur, do you have any parting words about Kev?
Yeah, I would say that I'd probably recommend Thud to the average listener because it's the most accessible, in my opinion, and there's a little of something for everyone. So he's got... So, Thomas, remind me, is that the album that's got When You Give Your Love to Me on it?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Goodness Gracious, Give Your Love to Me, all those.
All right, so it's a solo album, but he's got a lot of, like, just a little something for everyone, like cutesy love song, really kind of penetrating social commentary, interesting stories, like the T for One, it'll make you really sad. So if you want to be really sad, you could listen to that. Like, you know, we all want to be sad every now and then. So I'd probably say start with Thud, but that's just my personal opinion.
No, that's sound advice for the average listener, I'd say. The average Proglodytes listener.
What do you think, Iris?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. talking about Proglodytes, I really love your website, guys. Just keep it up with all the reviews and shows and podcasts, everything. You guys do a great job. Really, and how many people are there working there for you at the website?
Oh, millions, at least.
They all live in a cave, and we occasionally feed them crackers and little small things just to keep them working. But
we've got two reviewers that don't do anything except, you know, we send the music if we don't have time to listen to it, and so that's a guy that goes by Xerxes, and then a guy who goes by, what is...
Falstaff.
Falstaff, that's right, that's right. I only know him by his real name, which I don't know if he wants me to say, so... So we've got two reviewers, and then it's me and Thomas, and Iris, you're hired too, and we'll pay you the same that we pay them.
Yay, thank you very much. I feel honored. Where do I sign? Where's the contract?
We'll send it via carrier pigeon or something.
And also the complimentary pack of saltine crackers that we feed our other reviewers.
Yeah, so you're on the dole now. Well, thanks so much, Iris. It's been a pleasure talking to you and getting to know you. And we hope that this is the first of many guest visits that you allow us to have on our podcast. So,
oh, absolutely. Well, thank you guys for inviting me, of course. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I hope that, I think I will stay, I think, yeah.
All right, cool.